Welcome to your Sunday Reader. Today we'll be discussing the reading for the Feast of the Apostles, Saints Peter and Paul. A reading from the Acts of the Apostles. In those days, King Herod laid hands upon some members of the church to harm them. He had James, the brother of John, killed by the sword. And when he saw that this was pleasing to the Jews, he proceeded to arrest Peter also. It was the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. He had him taken into custody and put into prison, under the guard of four squads of four soldiers each. He intended to bring him before the people after the Passover. Peter was thus being kept in prison, but prayer by the church was fervently being made to God on his behalf. On the very night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter, secured by doubled chains, was sleeping between two soldiers, while outside the door guards kept watch on the prison. Suddenly, the angel of the Lord stood by him, and a light shone in the cell. He tapped Peter on the side and awakened him, saying, "Get up quickly." The chains fell from his wrists, and the angel said to him, "Put on your belt and your sandals." He did so. Then he said to him, "Put on your cloak and follow me." So he followed him, not realizing that what was happening through the angel was real. He thought that he was seeing a vision. They passed the first guard, then the second, and then came to the iron gate leading out to the city, which opened for them by itself. Then they emerged and made their way down an alley, and suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter recovered his senses and said, "Now I know for certain that the Lord has sent his angel and has rescued me from the hand of Herod and from all that the Jewish people were expecting." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. The angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him.
The angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him.
I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall ever be in my mouth. Let my soul glory in the Lord. The lowly will hear me and be glad.
The angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him.
Glorify the Lord with me. Let us together extol his name. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and delivered me from all my fears.
The angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him.
Look to him that you may be radiant with joy, and your faces may not blush with shame. When the poor one called out, the Lord heard, and from all his distress he saved him.
The angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him.
The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. Taste and see how good the Lord is. Blessed the man who takes refuge in him.
The angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him. A reading from the second letter to Timothy. I, Paul, am already being poured out like a libation, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have completed well. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. From now on, the crown of righteousness awaits me, which the Lord, the just judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but to all who have longed for his appearance. The Lord stood by me and gave me strength, so that through me the proclamation might be completed, and all the Gentiles might hear it. And I was rescued from the lion's mouth. The Lord will rescue me from every evil threat, and will bring me safe to his heavenly kingdom. To him be glory forever and ever. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. When Jesus went into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" They replied, "Some say John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter said in reply, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus said to him in reply, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my heavenly Father. And so I say to you, you are Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of the netherworld shall not prevail against it. I will give you the keys to the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Hello and welcome to your Sunday Reader. I'm Brian and I'm here today with Dawn.
Hello, everybody.
And of course, we're going to discuss the readings for the feasts of Saints Peter and Paul. And Dawn, there are a couple things that I wanted to pull out of the readings today. One of them comes from one of our saints of the day, Paul, in the second reading. And one of the things that I took from his reading to, or his letter to Timothy, was this idea of running the good race and completing it. Mm-hmm. A lot of times what I have found I get tempted to do in my own life is to kind of rest on my laurels or the things that I've done in the past and just kind of say, you know, well, I've done all these good things before. I spent a year serving at a soup kitchen in Brooklyn, or, you know, I've done service trips. I've done numerous projects and things. Why do I need to continue to do those things? And I think that Paul serves as a reminder for us that, you know, you need to complete the race. And of course, we believe that completion doesn't come until we're 6 feet under the ground, actually, or until we've been resurrected from 6 feet under the ground, as it may turn out.
That's pretty good, Brian, I must say. I like how you wove in the word laurels, because we were having this discussion about what it meant, and I thought it meant like the hindquarters of a dog, so thankfully Brian straightened us all out.
Well, actually, the dictionary straightened us out, but for those who might also be wondering, well, what are laurels? What they are is they can be the crowns that were worn or given to athletes or people in time of victory and honor in classical times, so they're these crowns made out of these leafy shrub kind of things. And so when the expression "don't rest on your laurels" means don't just rest on your past accomplishments, but plan future ones as well.
Very nice. Well, one of the things I like about this feast in general, we're talking about the Saints Peter and Paul. So here we have these two men, one who denied Jesus right before he was crucified, and the other who persecuted Christians. So we had these.
So let's celebrate.
That's exactly what my thought is. You know, here we are. We tend to say, oh, I'm not good enough to do anything like that. But here we have these people that weren't so great, but yet God used them to do great things later on. And so we should never shortchange ourselves. We alone can't do any of this, but through God's help, we can do great things.
Yeah. And the other thing that's kind of interesting about these two saints when you put them together is it kind of shows the universal mission of the church. And I don't know, I'll give some history here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar with all of this, Dawn, or not. But St. Peter was largely concerned with the Jewish people, because he himself was a Jew, and showing how Jesus fulfilled the Jewish covenant. And St. Paul is often called the apostle to the Gentiles, or to the nations, to the people who were not Jewish, because he saw his mission as going out to all nations and all people. And when you put them together, you can really kind of see how we have both the Jewish people and all the non-Jewish people coming together, and it kind of really shows that the church is for everybody. And actually, the first disagreement in the church, or the first thing that a council was called for in Jerusalem, was to settle this tension between the Jews and the non-Jews, and whether Paul was really an apostle, and these types of questions. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, they decided, yes, he was, and yes, Jesus did come for all people and not just the Jewish people. This was one of the first debates in early Christendom.
Hmm.
So kind of when we celebrate this feast, we can also think of the universal nature that God came for not just the Jewish people. He came through them, but not only for them, but for all people.
Now, I know that when I've gone to like the Vatican, sounds like I go all there all the time, but I've only been once. But there's a statue of each of them, and each one has something in their hands. Can you tell us about that?
Okay. Well, I know Peter has the keys in his hands, and I've not been over to the Vatican.
Sorry.
So
you don't go all the time like I do.
No, I'm not. I don't have my frequent flyer card, frequent visitor card. You know. You know, where you earn double points or something, as I go, earn double indulgences every time you show up. But Peter does have the keys, and of course, we see that in the gospel reading where Jesus hands over the keys of the kingdom and says, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosened in heaven. And really, this is where the church draws its authority from, is this moment right here, the authority being given to Peter. And of course, one of the great things about our Catholic tradition is we can trace our roots all the way back to
Peter. We believe that that authority is passed on to his, Peter passes that on to his successors, mm-hmm. all the way up to Pope Benedict the 16th. So Pope Benedict the 16th could also have those keys symbolically, you know, here while he's on earth. And it's one of the ways that we say truth is safeguarded in our tradition, is that we've been told by Christ that he will never abandon him on this rock. He's going to build the church, and the netherworld's never going to prevail against it. And also that, you know, what the church binds and loosens is bound and loosened. So it's the basis for our sacraments, especially the idea of forgiveness and things like that. Do you want to say something about the statue of Paul?
Well, I'm just trying to remember now that I'm being put on the spot. I'm thinking I'm remembering incorrectly, but I believe he must have a sword.
Yes.
And why would he have a sword?
Because the sword, my understanding, and I'm hoping I'm correct here, and we might have to come on next week and say, oh, that was a big mistake. But oftentimes, you know, originally Paul was out martyring Christians and attacking them, but Paul's words oftentimes can, or the word of God is often used as a sword, and it cuts like a sword. And Paul was a very notable preacher, even though we often comment on the way he writes. His preaching style apparently was very powerful and kind of cut people right at the heart, so to speak. And so it's a symbolic thing showing the power of the words with, or the authority with which he spoke, and how powerful his preaching was.
Ah, pretty good, Brian. So,
and again, I'm hoping that's correct. Well, and if somebody else knows differently, you can email us. You can email me at brian@workingtobeathell.org.
Wonderful.
So, one other thing that I wanted to bring up was from the first reading. I know you're looking at your watch and saying, what time are we looking at? But we have a few minutes left on. I'll be quick. Anyway, the first reading gave us this idea. We hear the whole story of Peter being pulled out of prison. And also, I think it goes into the psalm, too, the idea of the angel of the Lord will rescue those who fear him. And kind of this notion of putting our trust in God, and that God is not going to abandon us, even when we seem to be in our most depressed moments. I can't imagine being on death row, which is essentially Peter was there, chained and bound up with no way of escape, seemed like a particularly, you know, enlightening moment for Peter, or a moment where he probably really felt the power of God or anything. He probably felt abandoned. Again, you know, we also see it with Jesus on the cross, you know, this feeling of abandonment. But what we learn is actually in some of those moments where we feel most abandoned, that's when we need most to put our trust in God, that mm-hmm. he does have a plan for us and that he will rescue us. And even if it's as Paul says in the second reading, he's going to bring us safely to the kingdom. So that rescuing may not happen here on earth, but ultimately we have to place our trust that we will be rescued and we will be brought safely to that kingdom. So a lot of times, you know, while we might not experience the fortune that Peter experienced, where the angel showed up and guides him right out of his pain and misery, so to speak, that may or may not happen for us, but we can still place our trust in God that he will at least guide us safely to his kingdom, which, of course, will be after we die and in the next life.
And I think that these are extremes. Peter's in prison going to die. And so sometimes we think, oh, well, I'm not in that bad of shape and I shouldn't complain or I shouldn't bother God with all my concerns. But in reality, you know, whatever you're struggling with, wherever you are, that's always a time to trust God in that point and bring your concerns to in prayer.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. One of the things my sister has hanging above her bed, she has a sign that says before something to the effect of, before you go to bed, give your problems here, turn your problems all over to God. He'll be up all night anyway. So, but it is kind of a thing where we do want to turn all of our problems over. And also, we have to recognize that God can make himself vulnerable. And I see that in the gospel reading today when Jesus asks his followers, who do you say that I am? And I think, how vulnerable is he making himself right there? Because he's asked, you know, who do other people say I am? I think that's an easier question to hear the answer to, you know, because you can always say, well, they don't get me. They don't really know me anyway. But now he's asking the people closest to them, what is your sense of me? Who do you say I am? Have I been reaching you? Do you have any knowledge of who I am whatsoever? And, you know, he must have had a sigh of relief when Peter responds, "You're the Christ, the Son of the living God." Because he very easily could have responded, you know, "Well, we say you're also Elijah," or "We say, mm-hmm. you know, you are also John the Baptist," or any number of prophets. But it shows kind of on some level that they are getting something. They do see him as a unique figure. And I think that probably, you know, putting himself in that vulnerable position to wait to say, you know, "What is it that you guys have got from all this time with me?" Shows that not only do we need to put our trust in God, but that God at times, you know, while he was here on earth, needed some kind of affirmation in his human life. Now, I'm not saying God needs us to affirm him or anything like that, but I mean, God made himself vulnerable mm-hmm. to human beings. And of course, you know, the whole incarnation is a way of being vulnerable to human beings. So it's not only are we asked to become vulnerable to God, but God has kind of made the first move by making himself vulnerable to us.
Very interesting.
And I think on that note, now it is time to end our podcast, Dawn. And you're not going to be with us next week, but we wish you a safe trip. Do you want to say something real quick, where you're going or what you're doing?
I'm going to Gulfport, Mississippi to work on some Katrina rebuilding. So all your prayers will be much appreciated, especially since it's July and it's Mississippi. So it'll be fun.
And we wish you a safe trip, and we wish you God's blessings in your work. And I'll be back next week, and hopefully our listeners will be in. You'll be back 2 weeks from now.
That's right.
On your Sunday Reader. Have a good week. God bless.